Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 48 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and today is October. That's right, the price of Bitcoin is almost at 68K again, October 24th. And I just want to welcome everybody who's tuning in, everybody who's waking up, refilling their coffee, your tea, getting your water, or just getting that gunk out of your eyes still. I want to say thank you for tuning in this morning. It's always fun seeing everybody join, seeing the familiar faces, and I just want to say thank you. I see we have Jordan up on the Operation Libertas handle. Good morning, sir. I see Shane, Bob Van Kirk, Wade, Hunter, Allison. Good morning, ma'am. RV, Kyle, OpDoc. Good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody. While everyone's still trickling in, I just want to make sure everyone understands the reason we do this every weekday, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. And that is to ensure that the values our founding fathers fought for are continued. We need to show the world what a decentralized freedom technology can do for everyone. And we need to make sure we spread that message. And there's different avenues, different ways to approach this message. And we need to make sure that we're doing the right thing for everyone. And a lot of times it can cause a lot of controversy. A lot of times it might seem like we're going down the wrong path. It might be a path that we tend to walk alone. But it's important that we hold on to our values and hold on to what we know to be right and not be dissuaded or persuaded not to pursue this avenue. So I want to make sure that, again, we're spreading this message and showing communities, our friends, our family, make sure that everyone understands what Bitcoin can do and how we become sovereign individuals. So with that, I want to go ahead and welcome Lisa up on the stage. Good morning, man. Shane, I already said good morning to you. And good morning, Alex.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Well, I want to go ahead and jump into something that's pretty crazy. It's kind of a dual topic. This would apply specifically to us. And that would be that Denmark wants to tax unrealized crypto gains starting January 1st of 26. They want to increase this tax to 42%. And the reason they're trying to push this law is that they want to try and capture these taxes because crypto markets are highly volatile. And some investors avoid paying taxes by holding onto their assets during periods of high appreciation. If they're able to tax these unrealized gains, Denmark hopes to prevent the deferral of these tax payments and secure a steady revenue stream. So I bring this one up first because I think it's crazy. I think it's extremely tyrannical to do this. But Norway tried to do something similar where they wanted to increase their tax revenue by $146 million. And to give you a little insight on this, last year they increased their tax wealth from 0.85% to 1.1% for individuals who had a net worth over $1.8 million. So I think we can all agree that's a pretty small increase in the increase of the tax wealth. What happened, though, was a catastrophe for the country. They had $54 billion with a B dollars leave their country. This led to a loss of $450 million that the country would have been taking in taxes. So go ahead and share this with the panel, share it with all of you to kind of show you what happens when these countries try and make these implications and try to tax people to oblivion. They have very negative consequences. And so if anybody wants to jump in on this and start talking and their thoughts on this, I'd love to hear it. Sorry, that was a long rant. Alex, you got your hand up. Go for it, sir.
Yeah, sure. So there's a saying that goes something along the lines of capital goes to where it's best treated. And I think that this is going to continue to hold true in this case. The whole concept of basically Bitcoin and sovereign money is the game theory is that some countries will be anti-Bitcoin and then other countries will be pro-Bitcoin. And, you know, it's just going to move to where it's best treated. And maybe that's a good thing, because what's going to end up happening is that all the people who remain there and essentially get fucked by all these bullshit taxes are going to be like, man, this really sucks. And the world will all watch, and the world will be like, yeah, that really sucks.
No, I'm going to try and pull it up really quick. But there was a statistic for the Norway. I think the vast majority of the individuals who left the country went directly to Switzerland, just because they're so tax friendly. And so I think you're going to start seeing this play out. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the sovereign individual predicted that this was going to happen.
It would not surprise me to see it happening in more countries as well. I mean, countries are going to choose sides. It's going to happen, right? Over the next 5 years, you're probably going to see it play out where countries will be clearly, many countries, I should say, not all, but many will probably be clearly one side or the other. From my understanding, though, this is a proposal at this point. It's not actually a law. So the proposal is supposed to be made in the beginning of 2025, and I think this is the equivalent of a trial balloon. A trial balloon is where they'll suggest a policy and they'll kind of gauge public feedback, and based upon what the public says, they'll make a determination as to what they're going to do. So I guess we'll see how that pans out.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct. It is going to be proposed beginning of 25, and doesn't take effect if it gets passed until the first of 2026. So it'll be interesting to see how the citizens and people of Denmark push back on this, if there will be any pushback. But I think it's, we should start tracking how many people are slowly moving into El Salvador, because I know that they're extremely friendly with Bitcoin and tech sector, and they're trying to get people coming in. And I'd like to see how many of the citizens of these countries flee to countries like El Salvador, just because it's more beneficial for them. So
Denmark is actually a really interesting place in terms of, you know, the way this works. I think right now they're effectively taxed somewhere around 80% of their overall income. And I've spent a good deal of time up there. And they enjoy a high quality of life. It's just kind of part of their culture. And, you know, if they're already at 80% and they're looking at, you know, pushing this even further up, you know, maybe there's going to be some pushback, but I wouldn't really count on it from Denmark. Denmark hasn't pushed back in a very, very long time. And that's why they're at, you know, essentially about an 80% tax overall for the current population. And like I said, they receive, you know, they've got, you know, defense taken care of. They've got, you know, their healthcare, their schools. It's a fairly homogenous culture in Denmark. If you guys understand anything about, you know, geopolitics and everything that's, you know, been happening in Europe and massive immigration, this is one of those things where, you know, when a shared culture like this takes care of its own, apparently sometimes, you know, you can tax these guys up to including 80%. They live, you know, not in the McMansions and stuff like we do in the U.S. They live in very humble homes, and they like the outdoors, and they're just kind of a different culture up there, and they kind of put up with this stuff.
It's the cradle to grave mentality, correct?
100% Coleman. But you know, they're also a very strong people. I mean, they are, you know, in a way fiercely independent. It's very much, you know, when I was up there, especially in Aalborg and a couple of other places, this it's a farming, society. You know, they do a lot of their own harvesting of their own stock, their own, you know, vegetables and grains and everything else out there. So when it comes to being, you know, self-reliant, you know, these are also, you know, guys that are direct descendants of Vikings. So, I mean, when you think about it, you know, taking care of their own, being fiercely independent in terms of the way they live and humble in their owning and belonging. I'm not saying it's, you know, the way I'd like to live, but it's one of those things where it apparently it works for Denmark.
So I'm just trying to figure out really quick. How many people in Denmark, what percentage of the population owns cryptos? That'd be very interesting to see what percentage they're trying to tax. So in 2024, there's about 300,000 people in Denmark, or about 7% of the population. So pretty small percent that'll be affected. I mean, again, that's crypto abroad. We're Bitcoin focused, but this tax is going to be for everything, digital asset. Go ahead, Shane.
I was going to say, speaking anecdotally, a couple of my buddies over there, you know, when I started talking to them about Bitcoin, they kind of laughed and said, yeah, man, we don't have any extra money to invest in things like crypto or Bitcoin. And I kind of chuckled to myself because, you know, they're at that point where they feel pretty comfortable.
They don't have any extra money just because everything, the income brackets are lower, just because they're taxed on everything. They just don't have any disposable income.
Yeah, they don't have a ton of disposable income, in other words.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. And there's another, we can keep talking about this for a little bit longer, but it's a good segue to start moving into how Bitcoin really allows people the option and the freedom to go wherever they want to. There was a post, it was by Bitcoin Moms Who Bitcoin or Bitcoin Moms. And she was talking about something that recently happened in her neighborhood. And if you all know her, please tag her and let her know that we're reading her post she made. But there was a mailman who, over the last week in her neighborhood, killed one of the lawn workers that was mowing grass out in the neighborhood. And I guess the mailman always had a little bit of a temper, just due to the houses are kind of smaller, the streets are narrow, and because of that, there's a lot of people parking on the street. So I assume it made his job very difficult. But I guess he hit his breaking point and killed this lawn man. And so she went out on her post to talk about, she spent a lot of money to move in this neighborhood because of the school. It was supposed to be a safe neighborhood. And she invested a lot of time and her energy to be here. And now she feels trapped because she can't leave. She wouldn't recoup her money. And she just doesn't feel safe anymore. And so in her post, she talks about how she wants Bitcoin to increase in price so that she's able to be free of these chains and be able to move around the country. And for me, I think that's the ultimate goal for Bitcoiners, is the freedom tech. It's the ability to go through and do your own thing, and you have that ability to relocate anywhere. Anybody wants to jump in on this, please feel free. But I think there's an important message to spend some time on, and how this can help these people.
Well, I think it's an interesting question. I was just ChatGPTing what you were saying about Denmark. They are one of the happiest societies. So, I mean, I guess, are we after a lot of fiat, or are we after living in a place where we feel like we're safe, we have purpose, we have community? I mean, because we know statistically that a community leads to longer life, right? If we have a community, we feel more that we have more purpose. No one ever said, if you have more money, you live a longer life. Like, it's such a complex topic when we talk about these places. And when we look at a society like Denmark with American eyes, where, you know, we think everybody rolls their eyes at taxes. Maybe some people get more violent about the idea of taxes, but, you know, I would pay more taxes in the U.S. if I didn't walk out on the street and feel like I was going to get murdered and then have to, you know, mentally, you know, we have so much stimulus that's not great. And there's so many people that we see, whether they're in our lives or around us, who suffer in the U.S. Like, I don't know, you know, I mean, okay, fine. Tax me 10% more, 20% more, but can we live in a happy society where everyone feels like, you know, they've got a nice life?
I agree with a lot that you said there, Lisa. I do think that security and feeling safe is important for a longer life. If you're constantly living in fear, the stress, it just eats away at you and you can't enjoy the simple things. I think it was Nikki Bukele out of El Salvador said that United States isn't free if you can't walk the streets at night and not feel safe. So I think you're definitely right there. I don't think taxing would help the situation at all, though. I think the government's too big, too bloated, and that money would not be allocated correctly. And I would just point to Operation Gabriel with that. FEMA came in, it was trying to do things, and they just literally slowed and clogged up the entire system. So I think just having a smaller, like not neighborhood watches, but just having stricter consequences for people doing wrong. But also, you know, I think it stems directly from the money is broken. So it's making people do more rash and drastic things. If you're living paycheck to paycheck and you can't afford your rent, you're more inclined to take more risk or danger to make your ends meet.
Yeah but I wonder how much...
With Denmark, you know, it's a much smaller country and it's there's
not this huge gap between where the rulers are and where they're living and where the people are. And that makes a huge difference. Whereas in the United States, we're such a big country, the rulers are so kind of removed from the rest of society. Things like that make it easier to be taxed and have a government that actually does what the people want. And I think that is probably a big reason why they have happiness and high taxes. That is not the norm, though. I think that would be great. I would love to live in, you know, the only government I had was like my HOA, and I had to pay a lot, but that was the only form of government I had over me. It was some Karens running around in golf carts telling me my lawn's too long.
Lisa, do you want to go ahead?
Well, yeah, I actually have a note on my desk about there's a study of Danish twins. Has anybody seen or heard of this? But basically, it analyzed the role of your genetics versus your longevity. And the outcome was that, they concluded that only 20% of your life expectancy is determined by genes, and 80% depended on your lifestyle and environmental factors. And so, you know, some of those factors were how much you moved, how much alcohol you consumed, you're having a tribe, right? So having a community, but also a community where you share values, keeping family close, like having really strong family around you, near you, added 7 years to your life. And then, you know, I think really the simplest of all, or the one that maybe we all share here, is that they found that, you know, having a strong purpose your whole life leads to longevity. So, I mean, these are really things I think a lot about, and I don't think that they have anything at all to do with, I don't think they have anything at all to do with taxes. Like, I don't think my happiness is related to taxes. I just think that maybe our, I don't know. I'm just going to lean on the media, the mainstream media mafia, for everything, because I think they perpetrate what life should look like, what life does look like, how terrible it is. And then we believe it. We get in this doom loop. We get on TikTok. Like, I don't know what the odds or what the percentage of people in Denmark, you know, how much time they spend on Twitter or, you know, God forbid, TikTok or any of that crap. But it's got to be lower than us, right?
Yeah, Shane, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I mean, Lisa, to your point, right, in terms of feeling safe or feeling sense of purpose and doing all these things, I think this is where Bitcoin really inserts itself. You've got a totally different incentive structure here. And when you look at, you know, our current government, it's so centralized and so far away, like Jordan was saying, is, you know, you can't really put the resources that you earn, the things that you spend your life trying to, you know, gather and trading your life for, you can't put that to work in your local community. And then the other thing, obviously, in terms of, you know, the really inverted structure that we have for incentives here, is the government wants to be, and it tries to fill a gap that doesn't need filling by them. You know, this idea that they can become the, you know, the healthcare system, that they can become the emergency response system, that they can become the food system, that they can become the pharmaceutical system. You know, this is everything that you in your life and your family should be doing. And this is exactly the purpose of Bitcoin, is to decentralize and to keep as much of that wealth as you're trading your life for as possible. And that's going to create passion. It's what we talk about here at Bitcoin Veterans all the time, is It creates passion. It creates mission. It creates a sense of being. It creates community. And when we're looking at this from, you know, obviously a Bitcoin's perspective, you know, we say Bitcoin fixes these things, but it really, you know, it changes the incentive structure almost overnight. And those people who are already on it are so far ahead and they're already building these communities. So I think you're exactly right. But, you know, in terms of Denmark, you know, are they happy? Yeah, they're happy for now. But do they really have what they're looking for in terms of peace, or are they somewhat, divorced from the idea that there does need to be more of a sense of independence and you should be keeping more of the wealth that you earn to apply to your family and your community. So, you know, just things to ponder. And I, you know, obviously being there, it's a beautiful place and a beautiful culture and all those things. But, you know, I don't think it's really in the DNA here in America. And I think there's a better way to do it than even, you know, obviously Denmark does.
I think something that you mentioned, Lisa, definitely needs to be addressed, and that's social media. And I really think it's a curse. I think that the Facebooks, TikToks, the Instagrams are just a complete curse for society. I don't think there's anything that positive that comes from those outlets. All it does is make people feel extremely depressed, especially if you're having, you know, everybody has ups and downs in their lives. But it's when you're in that down, it's really easy to spiral, and getting on the social media platforms and seeing, you know, friends posting or coworkers posting staged photos, because that's exactly what they are. It could really make you feel insecure or jealous. And so I think that has a huge impact on the way society is trending. And so I, for myself, I really don't like it. If I didn't have a business, I wouldn't have any of the Facebooks, Instagrams, or anything like that. It's horrible.
Who wants to tell Coleman that we're using social media right now?
I would put X in its own little class, though, right? I don't see people taking, you know, unless you're Mike Alfred, taking pictures of your food or your wines. But for the vast majority, I use it more as a news. I don't see news coming out of Facebook or Instagram. And please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, X is probably the least censored. I still think it's some sense censored in some ways. Like, I don't think it's completely free. But I think it's probably the least censored social media platform. And also, if you just look at, this is something Elon said at one point, and I think he's probably right, is that, like, all of the world's kind of leaders are all on Twitter. And that's leaders in every profession and every field and everything, political leaders, so on and so forth. So they're all on Twitter. And then finally, Twitter is consistently outranking every single news app on the planet as the most downloaded and most used app. So there you go.
Yeah, starting.
Go ahead. Poking fun at Coleman was just... pictures of your food or whatever, if that makes you happy. Maybe that's what they're doing in Denmark, and maybe that's why they're so happy over there.
I was just going to jump in and kind of agree with that. I use social media as a tool, and it suits my needs. So, like, Instagram, I just basically have pictures of my family, and it pays me to have an store of pictures to aunts and uncles and grandparents and the dogs and see my kids. Private profile, I can curate the list. So for me, the social media is a tool, but I'm using it in that sense. But I can see how it can be overused or abused.
Hey, Hunter, where are you? Sound like you're on a bridge walking through traffic.
I thought he got ran over at one point.
I got honked at. Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, I'm working.
You're dodging trucks.
I cut off the lawnmower, and I'm kind of on the side of the road. So I'll go back to listener mode now. I'll shut up.
Dodging trucks in the freeway.
Yeah, Frogger's a game. It's not a real-life scenario.
It makes spaces way more interesting, I'll tell you that.
Lost my train of thought there. But, yeah, I guess there are benefits for social media, but, I'm going to go on the record. I'm not a big fan of Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I think it's poison. Good morning, AC.
Yeah, for sure. I mean... Facebook, if you spend any serious amount of time on Facebook, you're probably going to end up dumber than when you started.
100%. My mother-in-law, I love her. She's amazing, but she's constantly on Facebook, and it's horrible. It's poison. Unless anybody has anything else they'd like to talk on this, I'm going to start moving on to some other news. Once, thrice. It's kind of big news. Well, it is big news, but I wish it was better news. The Dutch court ruled that Bill Gates will face trial in the Netherlands over COVID vaccine misinformation. So the Dutch court had ruled that Bill Gates will have to be brought forward to face a trial due to falsely or due to false claims on the COVID-19 vaccine. Seven plaintiffs who suffered vaccine injuries are looking just to recoup monetary losses. So unfortunately, he's not going to face any jail or any severe consequences. It looks like he's just going to be having to pay a fine. But I think the thing to take away from this is I haven't seen anything stateside, any mainstream media talk about this, mention it whatsoever. But it would be nice that if he is found guilty of this, that it opens the door for others to be prosecuted as well. And just a reminder for anybody that might have been confused, they pushed this on every single person and they went after you as if you were a terrorist, you were killing babies in the streets if you did not get this vaccine. And so for them just to have complete immunity, we're not angry enough at them. So I would like to see some serious consequences. Again, this he's not going to serve any jail time whatsoever on this court case, but I do believe it will open the door. And so if anybody has any comments on this, let's have Adam. But I think it's something we had to hit on today.
The guy's just creepy, right? Like we always knew he was creepy.
Very creepy. I can't remember. It was dozens and dozens of times people reported that he went to Epstein Island. And then once they came to light, his wife, Melinda, instantly filed for a divorce. So I think that tells you a lot. How she didn't know that he was going to the island, though, a little sus.
Well, I mean, the dude's always going everywhere on planes and stuff, right? He probably has plausible deniability all the time. But the thing that I've always found really bizarre is the interviews where he starts talking about, you know, shooting all these chemicals like right into little kids' arms. And then he gets like bizarrely like giddy about it. Like he starts cackling in this really weird, it's just so bizarre. Like why would somebody act like that? It's just hard to understand.
Yeah, I think we all picture evil with a certain face, but evil takes many different forms, and I would classify that man as extremely evil, especially with a lot of the things he says. Anybody else want to hit on the court ruling, COVID vaccine punishments?
I mean, I think it's a good precedent to be set that, like, yes, people should have to pay for statements. I mean, but how many other, they're going after him, but how many other people just kept repeating safe and effective, and maybe their defense will simply be, well, the U.S. government said it was safe and effective, and we were just going off of what they said. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, like, where this goes and what really comes of it. But, I mean, I guess it's a start.
But doesn't he
The thing to keep in mind is that I think this is a civil case, which means it's not a criminal case. It's like a people suing for damages and whatnot. Criminal cases are completely different. And then to Jordan's point is that there were a lot of world leaders who said these were safe and effective and basically used the power of their office to push these vaccines. Indeed, created policies that essentially penalized people who did not comply. And so this happened on a global scale. It happened in many, many countries. And so the question becomes, what would have to happen for the world to agree to take all of these people and hold them accountable? What kind of court would that be done in? Would it be in an international court? Would it be The Hague? Would it be something akin to the Nuremberg trials? I think probably, yeah, but the whole world is going to have to be a lot more pissed off before that happens, I think.
I think you have someone that could potentially be pissed off enough going into office, and that would be RFK. I think he's got a serious conflict with them.
True, but here's the problem, is that Trump would be on that list. You know, at the end of his administration, he did push that stuff. So, you know, that's a difficult nut to crack when you work for the man.
Didn't look at it from that angle. Oh, go ahead, Jordan.
I just think what's important with the Bill Gates thing is, like, it might be a civil case, but it starts to change the public's perception of what is acceptable and what's not, especially if he's found, you know, guilty of whatever, has to pay whatever fine within this. It shifts the Overton window back to, like, no, this is not okay. So you kind of want things like this to happen before some Nuremberg type trial happens, to where if the society isn't ready to push for it, and they do a trial like that, and then it comes out, oh, everyone's acquitted, well, now you've set the precedent of, yeah, this is fine to do, and they could try it again. So I think it's kind of important to shift the Overton window and the cultural societal perspective on it before going to the next level.
Yeah, and if this is only 7 plaintiffs, there are millions and millions more people that would have an opportunity to sue them too. So you could see what the damages did to, use Alex Jones. He got sued for, was like $1 billion or something ridiculous.
It's
like
$1.5 billion.
Yeah. So you do that enough times, Bill Gates essentially will run out of money, and he won't be able to fight everything.
You do kind of wonder if that is part of the reason why they got a divorce, take half the assets, and then they're still good. Just speculation, just throwing that out there. Don't know any facts about that.
It's an interesting thread to pull at. When were they divorced, though? That would be the question.
It would have been right after the Epstein stuff. The original, like, as soon as the original list started coming out and whatnot, I think that's when that happened.
So that was post-COVID or pre-COVID?
It was post-COVID when they divorced.
Okay, yeah, so then they could see the writing on the wall potentially and just playing it safe. It'd be interesting to see how that unfolds over time. I want to say good morning to Bitcoin Carney. Good morning.
Hey, what's up, guys? I jumped up here kind of when you were asking, like, what would have to happen, and you stole my idea. I was thinking RFK too, and then Alex made a good point, like, yeah, it's not going to happen because Trump would be brought down with him. The other thing, I was just curious if anyone's ever gone down this rabbit hole. When you were kind of shitting on social media, I saw an interview with this neurosurgeon, Dr. Jack Cruz, interviewed by this guy, Danny, which I guess he's a pretty popular guy. I've not seen his stuff much, but Cruz was saying, like, he was talking with RFK's running mate, Nicole Shanahan, who's the ex-wife of Sergey Brin, the Google guy. And basically, like, the whole thing is an op, this whole blue light, all of our screens are blue light, and it's some kind of MK Ultra extension where we're fed dopamine through the blue light, and that makes us more susceptible to the messaging. I don't know, it sounded wild, but has anyone seen that?
I haven't seen anything with the blue light making it helping them spread their message, but there was documentaries, I would say it was back on Netflix, probably 3 or 4 years ago, where they just showed how the algorithms just learn and they figure out what makes you click and how to spend your time, and they're just constantly evolving. And so they are designed to make you not leave your phone alone. But I'm not familiar with this Cruz character.
Check him out. He's pretty interesting. It's, yeah, Dr. Jack Cruz, KRUSE. And it's a crazy interview.
Good morning, Op Doc. I didn't see you join the stage.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk. The thing that kind of buzzed for me when you were talking about the vax and Gates and all that, My perspective, I was practicing at the time, was how doctors were treated, given, you know, the information that was coming out, and then the mandates that quickly followed. And I don't know how, you know, Trump would be involved in that, but what I see are basically, it was mentioned in the conversation, civil versus criminal. And at the time that, and the way I see it, just in a nutshell, is there was a lot of information that was given to us as professionally valid information, and that we were supposed to then, you know, go along with a certain standard of practice. And then separate from that, if you didn't follow the practice, then you were going to lose your license, or, you know, be ostracized or whatnot in the community. And so, as it turned out, the information that that all of this was based on was incorrect, or some of it falsified. That's a whole different conversation. And so we were pushed into a certain direction based upon truly bad information. And then there were these mandates that happened later on, not under Trump's administration, but the following administration, that that you could actually lose your livelihood if you didn't follow that. And that divided our communities, in our medical community, incredibly. And you either followed, you know, you stepped in line or you didn't. If you stood up, then you had to face the fire. So all of this goes to my point of view, is that for all this information, those who put out the narrative and held to that, okay, the social media people or influencers or billionaires like Gates, okay, there's a certain standard, maybe that's a civil situation, but for those who mandated that then changed people's practice and then people got harmed by that, and that this is, includes the doctors, I'm really critical of the medical specialties, those that actually mandated in their practice that their patients get, you know, this technology, and I won't call it a vaccine because it's not, then there should be criminal things that follow. And that could also involve politicians and things of that nature. So the bottom line is civil versus criminal.
Doc, do you think, do you see it changing anytime in the future with the healthcare profession trying to, again, change what they've been doing, especially in terms of with the vaccine?
Disclosure, I retired. I got out of medicine. So a couple months ago. For those that I see in it, I can tell you that those who follow the doctrine, and this is specifically in my community, I can't tell you, you know, I was a military doctor. So in that community, they are absolutely indoctrinated. So they drank the Kool-Aid, and they're not looking outside the lines. That's a majority in that community. In the civilian community, I can't really speak too much, except that some of my colleagues in the area where I live and a bunch that I know have gone into a non-insurance, basically sort of a boutique kind of a thing where you pay them up front and they'll do whatever they need to take care of you in a more healthy way. So some people got out in that way, and then a lot of other people that I know who really looked at what was going on just got out entirely. So, and it just happened for me that, you know, I was at a point in my career where I was out, so I just got out myself. So, and focus on, you know, what we're doing here. Anyway, I think that a lot of people are still living in, there's a term that Eric Weinstein, I think that's the name, uses called KFAB, you know, the wrestling kind of community. And a majority of the medical community, that, and this includes the my specialty leadership and all of that, are completely KFABed in. And they're so invested now that they can't turn around and say, oh, yeah, we were wrong, and put themselves liable. The KFAB continues to this day.
Can you explain this KFAB more?
Oh, yeah. So, again, I think I'm pretty sure it's either Brett or Eric Weinstein, but I think it was Eric. So when you look at wrestling, professional, whatever, I don't know, WWF, whatever, but is everyone goes there knowing that, you know, it's not an Olympic wrestling match, right? It's not a true battle against one or whatever. It's a show. And yeah, there's someone supposed to win and someone's supposed to lose. And there's some kind of, it's all orchestrated by, you know, the organization to say, all right, here's the path of someone's career or whatever. But it's just a show. It's not really a competition. It's not, you know, true capitalism, you know, and all of that. It's like, it's all engineered to do that. But the audience has to invest themselves into it to believe that there is an unscripted outcome. And so they have to believe in whatever they're being shown and whatever they're being told, that this is real. And so that it's enjoyable for the people, they can enjoy their lives, they can get the endorphins and all that kind of stuff to say, okay, yeah, this is real. If they knew it, it's like, hey, here's going to be the winner of the night. And you go like, all right, everything else is just going to be BS. It's just going to be a show. Well, no one's going to get their endorphins because they already know the outcome and they know that it's not real. But if they can believe, if you can get the audience to believe that there's a real competition going on, that's the KFAB. And you put that into politics that, that, you know, I don't know, whatever. You can see that we're doing this for you and we're going to, you know, you're going to be better by choosing us or by choosing this situation. And so we buy into that and we go in that direction rather than, you know, say taking care of ourselves and our families on our own. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understood that, Doc. Did anyone need any more clarification?
Anyway, thanks for letting me speak.
No, you're welcome back up here, Doc, anytime. I like picking your brain on this stuff. It'll be interesting to see how many doctors switch over that want to stay in the practice or the field, switch over to, I think what you're referencing was DirectMD. So just, there's no insurance involved. It's just you pay a monthly fee to your doctor, and that's who you go to see.
Yeah, roger that.
Well, anybody want to hit on the COVID vaccine or anything else on this topic? We'll move on to the next thing. Okay, so I definitely want to hit on this. But before we do, I want to give a quick thank you to our partners. Punchplate, I see you out in the audience. Let's get a thumbs up. Let's get a fist pump for Punchplate. Make sure you stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Black Sheep Ammo, there's no better time than now to restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. So I've had this on my sheet for about the last week almost, and I definitely want to bring it up to make sure everyone is aware. The UK Labour Party have sent over 100 staff members to work with the Harris campaign in battleground states, specifically in Pennsylvania. They're going door to door trying to help Harris promote her message of affordable housing. So I want to bring this up because I went back, I ChatGPT'd it, I Googled it, just to make sure that what I'm about to say is 100% accurate. But any foreign interference helping in an election, that includes going door to door, spreading a message for a presidential candidate, is extremely illegal. And so I just wanted to make sure everybody is aware of that's going on because it's not receiving any attention. The only attention I can see right now is Elon Musk's $1 million giveaway, which I am not a big fan of. I don't think he should be doing it, even though it might be helping my side, my party. He is giving away $1 million prize for anybody that signs a petition for freedom of speech and the right to bear arms. So this petition and giveaway will continue all the way until November 5th. For myself, I don't think that they should be doing this. Definitely the UK should not. That's extremely illegal that they spent 4 years harping on Trump for having Russia interfere. And the UK is openly stating that they're helping with this. I don't think Elon Musk should be doing this prize money giveaway either. You shouldn't have to pay people, bribe people to sign up. You're not going to get true believers. You're not going to get a great following. You're just getting people that are following the money. So I don't agree with both, but let's hear it. Jordan, what do you have to say?
Well, nobody thought anything. NFL had all these ads saying get out to vote, and they're being paid to tell people to get out and vote. And
it didn't seem like it had any political affiliation, but it almost seemed like back then it was, oh, if you get out the vote, then it's going to swing things in favor of the Democrats. But now that it's people are out there saying get out to vote and it and they're afraid that it's going to swing things in favor of Republicans, now everyone's up in arms about it. And it's like, look, why don't you just let everybody pump up, you know, voter registration or whatever as much as they want and see how the see how things pan out. I don't know the like veracity of this, but there's been some reports coming out that the Venezuelan government basically owns some the software for some voting machines, and there's a CIA whistleblower coming out and basically saying that they did sway the 2020 election. And it just seems like, but I bring that up just to say that the software can be defeated if the voter turnout is high enough, because it makes it more difficult for them to like fudge the numbers. So if any of that is true and they want, you know, democracy represented, which is not something I'm particularly necessarily in favor of anyway, but if that's what they want, they should be all for it. They just don't like the results that they think are going to come. And that's my problem with democracy, is most people don't actually want democracy. They just want their policies to win. I mean, when the Supreme Court said that, you know, gays have the right to marry, that wasn't a democratic process, but the left cheered that on. And a lot of people did, because it was a, it kind of reached a critical mass of like being in the majority of people believing that, but that wasn't a democratic process. It was just, you know, 9 men and women in robes just decreed it, and everyone was fine with that. So people don't really believe in democracy. They believe in their side winning. And that's what a lot of this just comes down to every single time.
So what are your thoughts on the UK getting involved?
Well, I mean, it's just absolutely hilarious, isn't it? Like, we spent 4 years saying Russian intervention, or, you know, foreign intervention in our election process. That was all just made up and can be proved to have been made up. And here we are just like openly inviting another country to rig it. And it's also ironic because we know for a fact that we do that in other people's elections. And it's just, it's all just a game. I mean, it goes back to the, I forget what the term was that OpDoc used, but it's like, we all know that it's BS and we're all still kind of participating in this game. And I'm not saying that in regards of like, an election was stolen or votes were manipulated. I'm just saying, we all know that this, they're all out there playing these games, and we still go along with it as if these games aren't being played.
It's going to put a really interesting strain if Trump wins with the UK, knowing this information and knowing that it's public, because I'm sure after he wins, it'll be spread across a lot of mainstream media. So, and again, I'm not saying that we don't do this to other countries. We definitely do. But it's just, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Anybody else have anything they want to hit on this?
Can you hear me, Coleman?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Hey, just to kind of give Jordan some credence on this. This is the guy who was kind of blowing the whistle on the Dominion voting machines, and it's the Cartel del Sol that had the source code that is adopted in these Dominion machines. Was a guy that worked for the CIA. His name was Gary Bernson, and it was 1982 through 2005. Apparently, this, you know, if everything checks out, this guy held, you know, incredible clearances, was working all around the world. And when you understand that these things are not only rigged, but they can, you know, they can house them outside of the United States in terms of what the actual votes were, and that they can change the information, you know, in terms of who voted for who and who wins these elections. There's no telling, you know, how long Dominion and, you know, this source code has been out there changing our elections. And, you know, from personal experience, I will tell you, you know, when I ran for U.S. House here in Georgia, my entire district was turned in probably by about 9:30, except for the race that I was in a primary against a Republican. And when since that finally came in, I don't know, 1:32 o'clock in the morning, the polling that we were, you know, beating him 70-30% had been flipped on its head to where he won by about 70-30%. So, you know, there's no telling how much this has already altered our election. So whether you vote or don't vote, you know, that could be one of those things where it doesn't really matter. They're going to get the votes and move the votes that they need to the person they want in that office.
So I got a couple follow-up questions, Shane. I'm going to put you on the spot. How do you fix the current issue that we have where the machines are rigged? And the mail-in ballots can be forged. Anybody can do it. How do you make a more true, a more system that's fair? And the second part would be, do you follow the ideology of you should go out and vote early in case there's shenanigans going on the day of voting? Or should you only vote the day of, because this way either side can't see how many votes they have to beat by? It makes it difficult to cheat.
Yeah, we actually had a really interesting show. There's a couple of different people who are doing some things out there in terms of looking at the Bitcoin blockchain in terms of, you know, voting. And we had a guy on just recently, Carlos, and I forgive me for not being able to pull his name up out of or his organization up out of, you know, thin air. The problem with implementing that here in the United States is you'd have to do it statewide. You can't just start with it at a county level. And a lot of what you're doing in terms of voting is also federally funded. So the idea that we're going to get this change to something more complicated and, you know, more secure by the people who are ruling over the roost is slim to none. I think paper ballots are a great way to go. In-person paper ballots with ID. Argentina did this. They had the results tallied within something like 6 hours for all of Argentina. And the margin of error from what they were reporting was minuscule. And I think that's what it takes, because what we hear right now in terms of, well, there's no voter fraud or there is voter fraud, that's not quantifiable. And I think anybody who's, you know, a thinking person says, well, okay, well, there's obviously going to be some voter fraud. What's the allowable amount of voter fraud before we toss the entire election out? And that's something we never hear from mainstream. It's not something we ever hear from the politicians. We know who they're all owned by. And that's the truth, is there's nothing that's quantifiable about our current elections. It's just this is this and this is that. And you sheep out there will take what we give you. So I think paper ballots is definitely the way to go. And in the interim, until we can, you know, have a populace wrap their rotten mind around, you know, something like Bitcoin and then start to trust how things can be related to it. And like I said, Carlos has got a great one out there.
Something happened on my end. Is Shane still speaking? I can't hear him.
Yeah, no, I can't hear him either.
I thought it was just me.
I can't hear him either, but Carlos's company is called Simple Proof. He's an incredible man. I've spent quite a bit of time with their team over the last 6 months. It's a really cool concept.
Thank you, Lisa. I was trying to find him on social media, so thank you.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, something's going on this morning. I've been dropped out twice. I don't know where I lost you guys, but I guess I'll just start with the last question you asked too, is do you vote early or do you vote on the day? I think overwhelming the system on a mass push for the final day is the way to go. If they can continue to tally votes from these Dominion voting machines or any other compromised electronic system, they kind of have, you know, if they have weeks and weeks and weeks of data and trending of where they go, then you can start to, you know, use all sorts of predictive programming out there to understand where you're going to need to be by the, you know, by the deadline. So if you don't give them that kind of time to prepare and you go and mass vote all in one day, it's much harder to, you know, pull the type of numbers and rig the system the way that they obviously have.
Yeah, I think one of the big issues last election was you've got Trump out there telling people like, hey, don't do this mail-in voting. It's going to be rigged or whatever. But then you have this large section of the populace that is older, tends to be more conservative and susceptible to COVID and worrying about it, that stayed home because of that. And so I think he kind of shot his own base in the foot by kind of taking that approach, because you had, I think that is kind of what happened to at least some degree, is you didn't have that big push of people coming to the polls. Not trying to say that these write-in ballots were rigged or not, have no idea. But that seemed to only hurt him, even if you're thinking everything is above board. So I think Shane's right. Like, mass push day of is probably the best option.
That's good to know. People ask me what it should be, and I really don't know the right answer. And so I always told them to vote day of, but I would hate to give someone that advice and some black swan event happens and the vote doesn't get counted, or they're not able to do their right as a citizen. So we're getting to the top of the hour. Did anybody else want to hit on, touch on, go back to anything we had covered already today?
I mean, did we talk about the stuff going on with BRICS? How Russia's basically announced in addition to all the stuff going on with BRICS, but also Russia has, you know, really gone huge with their Bitcoin mining and data center investment fund. Like, I just find it absolutely, I don't know, maybe not surprising because we know the challenges that we face, but you know, other countries are embracing, they see the race, they understand that they've got to have this infrastructure. Not only do we need to have it on our, you know, as a reserve asset or however we're going to categorize it in the United States, but we also need this infrastructure, right? We need mining infrastructure. If this will be the rails of the future financial system, we must have the production capability in our country, right? It is a function of national security. And I don't see people, I mean, I know Bob Burnett talks about it. We touch on it occasionally here, but like, this is huge, right? Like, this is the new discovery of oil. This is like I always think of that old movie Giant in West Texas. Like, this is that moment again, and most of the world is not talking about it.
We did cover a little bit yesterday about the BRICS. We had Eomar, I don't see him in the audience, but he came on and talked about it in pretty good length. And so I'll try my best to rephrase what he had said. But it is, there's a lot of people out there who don't think the BRICS is a huge threat to the United States right now. And I would definitely push back on that thought or that viewpoint, simply because you're getting a lot of countries now that are more interested in it. And even if it doesn't go through, it takes 5 years for them to finally form a BRICS currency, which we discussed. We think it should be Bitcoin because there's no one entity in control. But it gets that talking out there. It gets the other countries kind of all thinking alike. And it's definitely not good for the United States. Jordan, do you have your hand up?
I do not.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So Coleman, I mean, you're right. It's actually 36 countries, right? I mean, it's not as official members, but I mean, yesterday or in the last couple of days during their summit, 36 leaders from 36 countries stood together and took a picture to demonstrate their solidarity, right? This isn't like Russia, China, India anymore.
It's no small feat.
And I think the thing that gets overlooked is that the countries that are applying for it are very heavily based in commodities. So oil, lumber. And so they hold a lot of cards. And I think it's just naive of us to brush this off as a nothing burger. So I think as this plays out, it's going to become more of a talking point. But in the near term, I think we just need to be very cautious when people are trying to brush it away. I also don't think it's a coincidence. Again, we touched on this yesterday. I don't think it's a coincidence that Russia is allowing its citizens to mine Bitcoin starting on the 1st of November. And I think that hit piece that came out from the Federal Reserve last Friday and the ECB, where they almost said identical things, I think they know what these BRIC countries are going to do. And so they're just trying to discredit any other way that they can get out from the U.S. system. And I think sooner rather than later, they're going to figure out the best, the most viable way, and that would be Bitcoin. And I do think that this will have pretty severe consequences if it builds more traction for the BRICS. And another thing that could accelerate this whole process would be if Donald Trump wins and they do pass that Bitcoin strategic reserve, you now force every other country to go ahead and start mining for Bitcoin or purchasing Bitcoin. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that could really accelerate things. You know, Samson Mao takes a lot of crap for his, you know, his Omega candle, 100,000 or I forget what size the candle is going to be. But at the end of the day, he could be right with that. If you get enough people or enough countries coming in and providing that demand, it could be pretty interesting.
We absolutely are. Sorry. I mean, we are absolutely going to wake up one day soon and two things will have happened. Russia will be exchanging crude oil and natural gas and their natural resources for Bitcoin, and Bitcoin will be trading 100,000, and then we'll wake up another day and it'll be trading 200,000. And you know, I mean, to like go back to the social media thing and the dopamine, like there is no greater hit that I get during the day than pulling up my mining pool and looking at the hashing that's going on, right? Like everybody needs to be mining. Get a BitX, you know, find a natural gas well, plug into one of these, you know, what great companies that we have in the Bitcoin space where retail miners can go. But like,
Sol Satoshi,
thank you. Like, there is no bigger rush or flex, in my opinion, than mining. Because once you realize that block space is more rare than Bitcoin, and you realize that this will be the underpinning of the entire world's financial system, like you've got to own infrastructure.
And that's, and we'll kind of wrap it up because we went past the hour, but that's Bob Burnett's theory or thesis as well, is that he thinks block space will be highly sought after and there'll be a huge demand for it. So definitely recommend going out and getting a little BitX, solosatoshi.com. They're super easy. They're super small. They're not noisy like a regular ASIC. So there's no reason not to. And they're relatively inexpensive. I think it's less than $200 for that Solo Satoshi. But I'm going to go ahead and call the show right now. So that's a wrap. I do want to thank everybody who tuned in, everybody listening in the audience. I see you all there. I can't name everybody, but I see Richard, Arthur, Elder, JB, WR, ZMAC, Brett, and everybody on our panel: AC, Shane, Alex, Lisa, Doc, Bitcoin Cardi, and Jordan, and Jacob for doing everything in the background. It really means a lot for me. Makes my job a lot easier when y'all are up here helping me talk. And so tune in tomorrow. I can't believe tomorrow's Friday, but we're doing it again at 10 o'clock. There's only 11 days until the election, so get out there. If you want to vote early, vote early. If you want to take the advice of Shane, go out there, vote the day of, but make sure you go out there and vote. That's the most important thing. We'll have the Bitcoin Veterans video podcast next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure we tune in for that. We've taken a little break just due to Operation Gabriel, but we'll have a full update and showing videos and updates with that. So check us out. You check that out at the Bitcoin Veterans handle. And so I just want you all to go out there and spread the message. Make sure everybody understands what we're doing, the mission of Bitcoin Veterans and the mission of Bitcoin. And that's just going to change the communities one individual at a time. And we do that by just spreading the message, shaking hands. So go out there and crush it, but do not shitcoin.